And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, I loved what I saw last night on Monday Night Football. What does this mean for the AFC or even the Super Bowl odds this early in the NFL season? Plus, a couple of quarterbacks not pulling their weight right now, and their coaches aren't happy. With Ed Ogeron on his way out from LSU, who could be next in line? There's also this idea I hate amongst college coaches. One of them spoke about it yesterday. We'll get to that later on. We'll do our Tuesday Top 10 as always. I'll let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong. And the NBA season begins tonight. We'll look ahead to the start of the NBA season. Plus, is the tide beginning to turn for Georgia sports fans? Who is the second best team in college football? And a whole lot more over the next few hours. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or just head over to our show page online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page from the homepage, and there you can find the latest versions of the show podcasted. You can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by streaming us online, or leave a comment for the show when you click on our show page at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Tuesday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, what's going on? Some pretty cool stuff. You know, a couple days from now, of course, is going to be WWE's Crown Jewel.
Of course.
And it's going to start at the same time the show does, so we can give updates.
Oh, boy, can't wait.
Well, and last night, former Furman U student Xavier Woods defeated Jinder Mahal to reach the finals against Finn Balor. So he's going to be wrestling on Thursday. We'll see how he does.
How about that?
I hate to, you know, sound like I'm rubbing this in, but I guess pretty few good days for Furman fans.
Yeah, salt in the wound for the Citadel. I think the Bulldogs fans are more upset about a Furman grad succeeding in the WWE than the actual football game on Saturday, probably, right? But I'm going to get no sleep until Thursday thinking about what's going on in the wrestling world.
And I know Bobby's all excited about it.
I'm sure.
I think he's going to have his part of this countdown and all that stuff.
Perfect.
And, yeah.
Yeah, can't wait. All right, so we have that to look forward to coming up in a couple of days. Let me start with this. With Monday Night Football last night, you know, it's interesting. The NFL Sunday was actually pretty poor. Most games were blowouts. The favorites won almost every game. But even with that, even with such a lousy NFL Sunday, these primetime games still continue to deliver. Tampa Bay and Philly on Thursday night. Even Sunday night, it wasn't the most exciting game, but it came down to the last play between Seattle and Pittsburgh. And last night, same idea. Comes down to a 4th and inches inside the 5, and the Titans hold on to beat the Bills. Primetime games this year have been stellar in the NFL, which is perfect for business. And for some reason, it has become a source of drama or debate about the Buffalo Bills and the decision they made there at the end of the game. Down by 3, final minute, on the road in Tennessee, they could have kicked the tying field goal and played on, or go for the win, which is exactly what they did. Trying to QB sneak it on 4th and inches, inside the 5 and coming up short, therefore losing the game. And I don't think there is much of a debate here. I love the decision. I thought it was the right call. I thought it was the easy call. And when it happened, right, you all have those group text messages for various things. You have one group text for maybe like your fantasy league, and you have another one, I don't know, maybe for your family, and you have another one with your buddies from college or your buddies that you grew up with or this or that, or whatever else you have going on in your life. You have all your different, you know, maybe you have a Gamecock with your fellow buddies who are Gamecock fans, or if you're a Clemson fan, you get the idea. I have one group text with a couple of buddies that we text all the time during you know, during the football games, because we're all the same. We sit around and just watch the games, text about them. And immediately, right, I sent a text in that group chat, go for it. As soon as Josh Allen came up short on that third down scramble, it was clear in my mind, it was clear in Sean McDermott's mind, and it should have been clear in everyone else's mind. You go for it there. Go for the win. And it goes back to something I said yesterday. A new philosophy in the NFL that more coaches need to adapt. Be aggressive. Go for the win. And what I loved about it yesterday wasn't just that the Bills went for it, but the decision was made by a defensive head coach in Sean McDermott. I discussed this on the show. I touched on it yesterday and in weeks past because I'm a Vikings fan. Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer is a defensive guy. And while he's somewhat aggressive compared to other defensive coaches, he still is incredibly conservative in the fourth quarter. And we know the old cliches, right? If you play not to lose, you will lose. As Herm Edwards used to say, you play to win the game. You have to be aggressive. You have to go for the win. And I've seen too many times this year coaches not being aggressive. We talked about it 2 weeks ago with the Cleveland Browns and Kevin Stefanski. They had a 3rd and 9. They ran the football, punted it back to the Chargers. The Chargers went down for the winning touchdown. Browns lose. Even my Minnesota Vikings on Sunday, 3rd and 8. They run the football in Panthers territory, punt it. Sure, pin the Panthers inside the 5. Looks like a great strategy. And then the Panthers went down the field for the tying touchdown in the final minute. When you have a chance to go for the win, why hand it back to the other team? And the problem with this is usually it's defensive coaches. Bill Belichick did it Sunday night with Mac Jones, defensive coach. And Belichick has been aggressive at times in the past. Remember when he went for it on 4th and 2 at his own 23 against Peyton Manning about a decade ago. And everybody ripped him for that. But defensive coaches typically are more conservative. We saw this with Will Muschamp and the Gamecocks. Defensive coaches typically like to play low-scoring, close games. They want to grind it out. They want to run the football. They want to play good defense, not run away from anybody. And it's going to come down to the fourth quarter, and they trust their defense will get the stop. See, that's the problem. Offensive coaches, of course, believe in their offense because that's what they do. And defensive coaches believe in their defenses because, well, that's what they do. Just like if your boss used to be a salesman and he was promoted to run the company, right, he's going to believe mostly in the sales team. That's the most important part. Maybe they get more resources. They get more attention. The salespeople will run the company. He believes that's where you make your money. It usually is. But he believes, right, that's the area. Or if your boss used to be a marketing guy, he believes that's the most important thing. We have to do a good job marketing. Whatever their background is, they believe that that's the most important part. Or they believe that's their strength, so that's what they're going to focus on because that's where they came from. And when you're a defensive coach, you believe my defense is going to get the stop. If that was the thought process last night, you say, let's kick the field goal because I trust my defense is going to keep this other team from scoring. At the end of regulation, if they get it in overtime, I don't have to worry about them scoring anymore. Let's kick the field goal, extend the game. I trust my defense. We'll get more points and win. That would be the thought process of a conservative defensive coach. The offensive coach would say, hey, they can't stop us. Let's go for the win right now. And that style typically wins out more often because the NFL has become so offensive. Right, the defensive coach believes my defense can always get a stop. It's why Mike Zimmer continues to punt, puts his defense back on the field because he thinks that other team's not going to score on us. And guess what? They keep scoring on you in the fourth quarter to make the games far more difficult. And in the NFL nowadays, you have a higher rate of succeeding if you go for it on offense than you do trying to stop them on defense. It's never been harder to play defense. Last year, the NFL set records for completion percentage, for touchdown passes, for points scored. And as we always talk about around here, you have to adapt or die. You have to keep up with the times. Right? Much like I've discussed with Dabo Swinney in the transfer portal, sometimes you have to go against your original thought process. Sometimes you see the way the industry, the sport, your company, your business, whatever it is moving, transitioning. You have to stay with those changes to keep up. You can't be stubborn. You can't think, oh, that's great. They can all do that. We make our money on defense. Well, that's not really the league anymore. It's all about offense. Dynamic quarterbacks, great players, new rules, helping out the offense. If you're a defensive coach, you can no longer just rely on your defense. You have to remain aggressive. Go for it. And that's why I love the Bills' decision last night. Look, it's 4th and inches. You have a 6'5 quarterback. Now, he ended up slipping, and I think that played a huge role. And the Titans, credit them, they did a good job defending the quarterback sneak. You know, I think that was the thought process going in. They were going to sneak it. But nobody has had a higher success rate on quarterback sneaks than Josh Allen and the Bills since he entered the league. Tall quarterback, right? Tall, long, big quarterback. Put him under center and just push him forward 6 inches. Didn't work out last night. They tried to get a little cute, put him in the shotgun, right? Then motioned him under center, or he came up under center, tried to confuse the defense or catch him off guard. And as he was transitioning, as he was on the move, taking the snap, his feet gave out from underneath him. He slipped, he fell, couldn't pick it up. I would have just put him under center, ball forward. Now, you don't have to get too cute, but I love the idea. You have a tall, big quarterback, put him under center, hope he falls forward for a few inches, go for the win, especially when you're on the road. And I know a lot was made about the number of Bills fans in the stadium last night, but it's still a road game. It's still not 100% Bills fans, even if it's 50-50, right? That's more so than what you typically have at home. You go for the win on the road, play for the tie at home. At home, maybe you do trust your defense a little bit more. You can rally around your crowd. You can make it tough on that other team. They have to go with the silent snap count. Right? You hope you get them in a couple of offsides. It can be a hostile environment, that team trying to operate on the road. But when you're on the road, just go for it right there when you have the chance. Go for the win. And I love the play call last night. And I'm surprised it's being debated today. It's being debated by those who haven't updated their thought process and are still thinking this is 2007. Right? Oh, kick the field goal, go to overtime, and you know, try to play. No. Because the Titans still had a chance in that fourth quarter. And again, to bring it back to my Vikings, the team I'm most familiar with, I've already seen twice this year that they've driven down the field in less than a minute for the game-winning field goal. So just because there was whatever, 38 seconds, whatever it was last night, there's still time. Right? The Titans make one big play downfield, they kick a field goal, you could lose in regulation. You go to overtime, you lose the coin toss, the Titans get it first, they go down the field for the touchdown, you could lose there. They did score 34 points last night. Derrick Henry did run all over that Bills defense. You're really trusting that defense? I love the move. And more coaches should watch that last night and take note. When you have the football, go for the win. Whether it's the Browns, the Vikings before the Patriots on Sunday, I see coaches do it every week. Why take the opportunity to win out of your hands? Right, if you convert a third down play, you win. And instead they think, that's okay. We'll pass up that opportunity. We'll give you the football and give you a chance to go win now. 2 weeks ago, the Chargers did. On Sunday, the Cowboys did. And the Vikings almost blew it. The Panthers at least tied it. And then the Vikings ended up winning in overtime. But the Panthers cashed in on their opportunity as well. Especially in an offensive league, limit the opportunities for the other team's offense. But I'd never understand this thought process. When you have a chance to go win, do it. Right? As they say, you want something done, right? Do it yourself. You want to go win a game? Do it yourself. Put that ball in the hands of your quarterback and pick up a couple of yards. In the case of last night, pick up a few inches. And if you can't do that, maybe you don't deserve to win anyways. Instead of giving the ball back to the other team and say, okay, here you go. We hope to stop you now. Good luck. We're seeing points score easier, quicker, more than ever before in the NFL, and you still want to rely on your defense. Love the play call last night from Sean McDermott. Love that it came from a defensive coach, trusting his offense. Now that the Bills lost that game, they fall to 4-2. The Ravens have the best record in the AFC. But when you look at ESPN's FPI projections, Buffalo still has the best odds of winning the Super Bowl. ESPN's FPI gives them a 30% chance of winning the Super Bowl. Tampa Bay and Arizona are tops in the NFC at 14%. Then you have the Rams, and then the next AFC team, Baltimore, is at 8%. The Cowboys, I was surprised to only see at 6%. The Chiefs are at 4%. Even with that loss last night, the Bills are still believed to be far superior right now in the AFC. When you look at the standings, the Bills are 4-2, tied with the Titans, who now have the tiebreaker. The Chargers and Raiders are 4-2, and the Ravens are 5-1. The Bengals, by the way, also 4-2. And when you look at the AFC, the Bills will have another big test moving forward. The Titans will have a big test against the Chiefs. But even with that loss last night, a close loss on the road, came down to the final play. Bills had chances to win. Their biggest issue has been their struggles in the red zone. But for Buffalo, even with that loss last night, maybe the best team in the AFC still. And in that poor division, look, you can afford a loss like that. Typically, you can't, but they still have a two-game lead in the AFC East. They still get to play the Jets and the Dolphins. Those should be wins. Should beat the Patriots. They'll get some easier wins down the road. Now, you'll be fine. It's why you can be more aggressive, because you have more wiggle room. You have more of a buffer zone to fall back on. Love the play call last night from the Bills. Even in that loss, I think we've seen enough that right now still believe they're the best team in the AFC. Either them or the Ravens. Those are the two teams that have played the best so far in the AFC. Let me shift to this. Couple of coaches unhappy with their quarterbacks. Sam Darnold, Matt Rhule, the Panthers being one of them. We talk a lot about quarterbacks who are trailers or trucks. Are you a truck that can carry the team? And this is the philosophy of Bucky Brooks, former NFL player and scout who works for the NFL Network. And I always loved this analogy or metaphor, whatever it is, this thought process he always had when he looked at quarterbacks. You're either a truck or a trailer. If you're a truck Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, you can carry your team to victories. If you're a trailer, really everybody else in the league that aren't those handful of guys, then you need your team to help carry you to victory. You're a little more of a game manager. You can make some plays, but you need help. That's the case for a couple of quarterbacks in the league, and their coaches are realizing this and aren't happy. Let's first start with Dan Campbell, head coach of the Lions. Now, I don't know what he was expecting. The Lions are a lousy team. They're 0-6. They go out and get Jared Goff. Here was Dan Campbell, his reaction after Sunday's loss and his thoughts on their quarterback right now, Jared Goff.
I will say this. I still don't feel like we can accurately judge him one way or another. I don't feel that way yet. Now, I will say this. I feel like he needs to step up more than he has. And I think he needs to help us, you know, just like everybody else. And I think he's gonna need to put a little bit of weight on his shoulders here, and it's time to step up, make some throws, and do some things.
That was Dan Campbell talking about his quarterback, Jared Goff. Here was Matt Rhule, head coach of the Panthers, talking about his quarterback, Sam Darnold, who struggled once again on Sunday.
Sam's not playing well enough. Let's start there, okay? And which means that Sean and Joe and me are not coaching good enough. The shame of the game yesterday to me, when you really go back and watch the game, is, you know, we ran the football well. We just have not been committed enough to running it, and that's going to change. I can just tell you right now, you'll see a vastly different look from us moving forward. We're not going to line up and drop back and throw it 40 times a game and think that that's going to win the game for us. It hasn't. And so, you know, there's no McCaffrey. Well, Chuba's showing us that he can run the football at a high level when given enough opportunities. So we're going to redefine who we are, and we're going to run the football, and we're going to protect our quarterback, and we're not going to turn the ball over anymore. And that's the only way that we're going to win.
Not comforting as a quarterback when you want to hear that from your head coach. We can't throw the football 40 times. The only way we're going to win is if we have a good run game. We have to be able to get it going without Christian McCaffrey, yada, yada, yada. Essentially saying, Sam hasn't played well enough. We need to ask less from him. We need to take the football out of his hands. Not really what you want to hear from Darnold, right? You wouldn't be saying such a thing about Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady. Like, we don't want those guys throwing it too much. We got to make it easy. In fact, that's what we've criticized the Seahawks for. We're always taking the football out of Russell Wilson's hands. And everyone's saying, let Russ cook, right? Let him go out there and make plays. Why are you running it all the time? Why are you handing it off? You have a star at quarterback. For the Panthers, it's the opposite. They look around and say, like, yeah, we really don't have that star at quarterback. We don't want him to throw it a bunch. We need to hand it off, shorten the game, get him some assistance. But these are two coaches that are in the same boat, with Darnold and Jared Goff. Two quarterbacks that are more trailers than trucks. Two quarterbacks that need that help more than others. Jared Goff needed Sean McVay. He hasn't won a game in his career without Sean McVay. He is 0-14 when he plays without Sean McVay. Sam Darnold, 3-0 with Christian McCaffrey, 0-3 without him. The numbers, huge difference. They get ugly with C-Mac out injured. He needs Christian McCaffrey. And we discussed this on the show yesterday, right? But when you have a quarterback that's so reliant on that one thing, when you have an employee that's so reliant on one thing, when you have a company that's so reliant on one thing, you could set yourself up for failure if you ever do lose that one thing. You have to have a couple of different options, a couple of different go-tos. And for the Panthers, concerning that Sam Darnold is so reliant on a Christian McCaffrey, and now he's out for a few more weeks. But two teams in the same boat, they look at their quarterbacks and they realize they need more pieces. Darnold is not the same quarterback without Christian McCaffrey. Jared Goff's not the same quarterback without Sean McVay. And it's hard to rely on a quarterback that needs that assistance. You want that truck that can carry you to a victory even when things are down. A la an Aaron Rodgers. Or Patrick Mahomes, or Tom Brady, right? The same issue right now with Baker Mayfield. A lot of injuries on the Browns. They're not winning games. And you look at your quarterback, and you want more from him. That when things are down, when you're behind the eight ball, he can still will you to a victory. On the text line, somebody asked if they should move on from Sam Darnold after the season. Look, I was big on Sam Darnold heading into this year. I thought he'd have a good season. I think he still can. We'll see when Christian McCaffrey gets back. But I think it has been evident, based off of these last couple of weeks, that he is a guy you can't really trust. In terms of being that truck to lead you where you want to go, that everything needs to be perfect around them. And I want a little bit more out of my quarterback, especially when that thing he needs, Christian McCaffrey, is as injury-prone as he's become. That's hard to rely on. It's hard to say, hey, here's our quarterback, but he's only good when he plays with this running back. And by the way, this running back is always banged up, and we can't count on him to be on the field anyways. I compared it yesterday, that person in a relationship who's codependent, but the person they're in a relationship with has to travel for work all the time. And it's like, yeah, she only does well when he's around, but because of work, he's never around. probably not a good combination. Same idea here. And when you look at the quarterback market, who knows? Maybe Deshaun Watson does become available this offseason. Maybe Aaron Rodgers does work his way out of Green Bay. Russell Wilson in Seattle. And the Panthers have a lot of salary cap space and a very aggressive owner. Certainly, they should look to upgrade one way or another. Either way, even if Darnold plays well the rest of the season, should always look to get better at the quarterback position. I imagine they will in the offseason. And also on that text line, they asked, would you trade Christian McCaffrey at the end of the season and get some picks back that you traded as part of the Sam Darnold deal and the others? I made the case, I think it was 2 years ago, before they gave Christian McCaffrey that contract. I made the case they should have traded him then when his stock was the highest. Get something for him. Instead, they invested in Christian McCaffrey, paid him a lot of money, and he hasn't seen the field very often the last 2 years. Great running back, but has become injury prone. And we've had this conversation many times. It's as old as sports talk. Not quite. But it's been an evergreen topic for years. Do you pay those running backs the second contract? More often than not, it doesn't work out. I made the case going back before that contract, this is the time to unload Christian McCaffrey. As great of a player as he is, as unpopular of a move as it may seem, get something for him instead of investing in him and now paying him to be on the sidelines here moving forward. Especially when you then bring in a quarterback who is so reliant on that running back who can't stay on the field. The Panthers, 3-3, need to bounce back. And they're going to try to do it with the run game. The good news for Carolina is that when you look at their schedule, they have the Giants and the Falcons the next two games. Two opportunities to get back into the win column against two defenses that have not been all that great this year. When we come back, we know Ed Orgeron is on his way out eventually from LSU. Who should replace him? Jimbo Fisher is a name that's commonly mentioned. Well, he had some strong words yesterday. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up with an opening at LSU, who will be the one to fill it? Who will replace Ed Orgeron? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. It is, in fact, a Tuesday afternoon. Yesterday was the first time so far this year, or at least this season, that I woke up in the morning yesterday and it was colder than the temperature I set my air conditioning at. Starting to turn. Gets a little cool in the morning and at night when the sun's not out. Starting to get a little, you know, fall feeling in the air. It's hard to believe. I was talking to a buddy the other day, and it's hard to believe. I looked at the calendar. It's already almost November. Like Halloween. I haven't watched any of my scary movies yet. I'm too busy watching playoff baseball. Now we have the NBA starting up tonight. Halloween's in less than 2 weeks. And this whole month's going to come and go. My favorite month of the year. And then we're going to be into November. I haven't taken advantage at all.
And this is what we call late football season weather.
Yeah, which is nice. I've always said I like it. I like sweatshirt weather. I like having to go out and throw a sweatshirt on. You go to a football game, you wear a sweatshirt. Instead of, like, I enjoy the warm weather as well, but when you're sweating out there at a game and it's like 90 degrees, this is more comfortable to me. And I like that it's only the morning and the night, at least right now, right? You go, once the sun comes up, you go out to grab lunch. It's a beautiful day. But then, you know, it's still a little crisp, a little cool in the morning, at night. Nice. Ed Orgeron on his way out at LSU. We know that. Who's next to replace him? Well, the number one name that is always mentioned is Jimbo Fisher. Now, I thought, and I wondered about this aloud on the show yesterday, Jimbo, we hear about this buyout, $96 million. Why do people keep talking about Jimbo Fisher? He's not going anywhere. No school is going to be willing to pay that much. And I wondered, on air, if there was some sort of clause where that was like a one-way buyout. Only if they fire Jimbo Fisher, not if he leaves for another job. So I did some digging last night because I keep reading everywhere I see, everyone talking about this, everyone keeps saying Jimbo Fisher. And the connection is not only that he's a good coach and he worked at LSU, but also their AD currently at LSU is the one that hired him at Texas A&M. So So he's hired Jimbo before. Jimbo has worked there at LSU before. Good coach, knows the conference, of course, has won a national title. He really checks pretty much all the boxes. But I thought, no way are you getting out of this contract. So I did a little digging last night, and it is, in fact, one of those one-way buyouts. How desperate is Texas A&M to give Jimbo that money, to give him the guaranteed money of the deal, to give him a contract extension or a boost after 3 years, to give him this buyout of $96 million, but it doesn't cover you if he wants to pack up and leave tomorrow? That $96 million figure is only if Texas A&M fires Jimbo Fisher. But Jimbo could leave for a new job tomorrow, and as I understand it, and has been backed up by somebody else on the subject, the school that would be hiring Jimbo Fisher would owe nothing. He could leave Texas A&M tomorrow for nothing. Texas A&M could just lose him. Now talk about how desperate you are as a school. I always compare it to in a relationship where you're dating somebody you think is out of your league and you'll do anything because you're so insecure that they're going to leave you. And in fact, they did it in the episode of Seinfeld with the hand. He's got the upper hand. George says, I have so much hand, it's coming out of my glove. Right? That's Jimbo with Texas A&M. They give him everything. $96 million buyout only if he's fired. But if you want to go anywhere else, yeah, go ahead. We can't do anything about it. Go take another job if you want. And if you're going to stay here, we'll pay you, $7.5 million a year to go 500. It's amazing. So I understand now why Jimbo seems to be the front runner, why he seems to be, from those on the outside, the belief that Jimbo is the number one candidate for LSU. I understand why. So Jimbo, I don't know if this was prompted. I don't know if he was asked about it or if he just has heard all the rumblings and he wanted to address it. But here was Jimbo Fisher yesterday at his press conference talking with the Texas A&M media and delivering a strong message about his name being linked to LSU.
I'm going to say this right now, it's in October right now. I love being here. This is the job I wanted. I'm being here. I got a great contract. I have an unbelievable chancellor, have an unbelievable president, unbelievable AD, that we're building something. We're recruiting great players. I really believe we're on the process of building something great. I plan on being here and fulfilling this contract and doing everything. My family has roots here. I got ranches here. I hunt here. I love everything about this place. And I say that because, listen, there's nothing going on there. There's nothing happening there. And I don't be disrespectful to anybody else. I coached there. It was a great place. We won national championships. It is one of the best, best places. It's a wonderful place. I love being an A&M, and I plan on being an A&M here and fulfilling my whole contract. I love everything about this place. And let me tell you something else. And the way this place has embraced me and my family, and including our foundation, the things that are going on with our foundation, the way the people have embraced it, the way people have done everything here in College Station, I love everything about the people here, the administration here, and everybody in charge here and the people who run this organization. And I love it here.
Jimbo yesterday makes it pretty clear. Now, number one, that's how you answer that question. A lot of times we see coaches try to, try to dance around it. Mario Cristobal's one when he kept being asked about USC. He said, I'm just focused on Oregon. Go Ducks. Right, well, if you're not interested, just come out and say it. Otherwise, everyone's going to continue to speculate. The non-answer is actually an answer. Right, that you don't even want to address it? Why? If you're not interested, it should be easy to just say no. Coaches oftentimes do that, probably because they don't want to close that door. But for Jimbo Fisher, that's what you would want to hear if you're a fan of Texas A&M or if you're a fan of him being your coach at Texas A&M. But also, number two, we know don't believe anything coaches say at the podium. Because it was also Jimbo who said at Florida State before leaving, quote, I plan on being here for a long time. And then within a couple of weeks, he was out of there. It was Nick Saban who said, quote, I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. Only for a week later, him to be introduced as head coach of Alabama 15 years ago. Never believe these coaches when they say these things at the podium. But if you are a coach, that's the route you have to go. Enough of these other coaches, dancing around the questions and not giving firm answers. No, you should come out and say, no, you're not interested. Even if you are, even if your agent is talking to their AD behind closed doors. But publicly, you can't admit to that. You have to give a nice, firm answer like that. And if you do then leave a few months later, sure, it makes you look bad, but you could say, hey, things changed. I wasn't interested at the time. Everything I said then was true. And then, whatever, this happened, that happened. They upped the money. Something happened here. We lost this kid. The AD said something to me. I wasn't happy. Whatever it is, you change your story. Something changed. Your opinion changed. At the time, what you said was true. Jimbo will be the number one candidate that people will talk about. We have no idea what LSU's actually thinking. But if you ask anybody who covers college football their thoughts, Jimbo is always number one on the list. I've been saying Mel Tucker as well. I know Joe Brady is commonly brought up. He would be a good option for LSU. But I also think maybe the best option, too, would be somebody along the same lines of Jimbo, and that would be Chris Peterson. Now, Chris Peterson was the coach at Boise and then Washington and then retired because of stress 2 years ago. So maybe he would have no interest in coming back to college football just 2 years later. He's working for Fox covering college football, and he's working still with Washington. He has some sort of role on campus with them. I'm sure he's just happy. Making a lot of money, made a lot of money as a coach, doing fine, doesn't have to worry about that stress, spending time with his family, only 56 years old. But if he has that itch, I would at least make the call. If he has that itch and he's interested to come back, I would certainly find out. I would have him tell me no. And the connection would be, well, he too was hired by this athletic director, much like Jimbo Fisher. This AD knows and likes Chris Peterson. And the other advantage Chris Peterson has, you could bring him in right now. I mean, Ed Orgeron knows he's on his way out. Chris Peterson is not coaching. If you want to hire Jimbo Fisher, you're going to have to wait till the end of the year. If you hired Chris Peterson, he could get started now. Start recruiting now for the next class. Sure, it'd be awkward. Ed Orgeron would still be there, and his replacement would already be there working, and you'd be paying two salaries, which you're going to have to do anyways because of the buyout. Sure, it'd be a little uncomfortable, be a little odd, a little weird, but that's the guy I would call. I would call him today if they haven't already. And I'd say, hey, Chris, any interest? And if so, right, hey, let's get this thing going. Come on campus now. Start working with the guys who are here. Start recruiting. Let's get a head start on this because he's available. The other coaches that you'll hear mentioned, Lane Kiffin, Joe Brady, Mel Tucker, Luke Fickell, Jimbo Fisher, you're going to have to wait a few months, Billy Napier, all good options, but you won't be able to hire them till the end of the year. Then they'll fall behind in the first year of recruiting, right? Putting their staff together, all that. Whereas Chris Peterson is the one guy who's worked with the AD before, has had success at multiple stops, has won with less talent, and could get started right away. That's the first name I would call and see if he has any interest in coming back to college football. He would do a great job with the resources and the program of an LSU. Coming up, speaking of coach speak, what Jimbo said there, look, take it with a grain of salt, but at least he's being forthright, right? He's being truthful, or, well, what we believe to be truthful. He's at least addressing the topic head on instead of, like I said, these coaches that dance around it, don't want to give you an answer and just say something along the lines of, go Ducks. I mean, that's no answer. That's actually being childish. I love that Jimbo came out and said what you want to hear, even if it's not true. At least he addresses it. But with that said, when we come back, there's this other thought process amongst coaches that I just can't stand. And one coach in a Power 5 conference yesterday, in a press conference, said something that I think is nothing more than an excuse, and I think it's a lousy thing for coaches to say, and we'll get to that when we come back. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, one Power 5 coach committed a pet peeve of mine. We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. It is spooky season. I don't know this song. Who is this?
It's Tubular Bells by Mike Oldfield.
Interesting.
It does kind of sound a bit like the Halloween theme.
It does. It's kind of creepy. I like it. Any idea when this song came out? Was this before?
This was, I think, around 73, 74
okay, yeah,
time
so
frame.
Okay, so this would have been before the original Halloween. Tis the season. Hey, the More Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They've been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. They provide residential and commercial roofing, and in 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online as well at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. So if I was a teacher today grading coaches, and how they handle certain situations. I give Jimbo Fisher an A for the comments we played last segment, for the way he addressed the situation. Now, everything he said may have been a lie. He very well may be hired as the next head coach of LSU in the next about 2 months. Still doesn't change my opinion about what he said yesterday. I like a nice, good, firm answer. Give me something here instead of all these coaches that just want to avoid it because they don't want to, you know, close any doors. Maybe they feel that if they say something like that publicly, that school will take it as gospel and won't contact them. I don't know. Or maybe they're just uncomfortable with lying, so they say, you know, go Ducks. I keep using the crystal ball as the example because I hate that stuff. So if Jimbo gets an A, this other coach, I give an F. Because this other coach really pulled off a pet peeve of mine, something I hate that college coaches often do. This is Brett Bielema in his press conference yesterday. Now as the head coach at Illinois in his first season with Illinois. They're off to a 2-5 start, not a very good team. Here is Bielema speaking about his program yesterday.
I just know this. As a head coach, you're only as good as your roster, right? I kind of learned that the first time I went to the Kentucky Derby, right? Nobody was betting on the jockeys. Everybody was betting on the horses, right? So to win a Derby, you got to have the right horse. And I think our players are going to be a reflection of what our program stands for. I stood at the front of the room last year when I took over and said everybody is invited back because of COVID. They gave me the opportunity to do that. But as this roster continues to transition, I've got to make tough decisions. Players have to make decisions. The roster is going to have to change to get to where we want to be to win a championship. So I recognize that probably midway through the spring last year, through the summer, just certain positions haven't maybe played out the way they envisioned them to. In particular, the offensive line, I don't believe we have a player in the two deep that they've recruited here over the last 3 years that is really significantly doing anything for us in the playing department. That's a major concern, right? So that's something that we have to do. Top two quarterbacks that have played to this point are both transfers, right? So there hasn't been any development at that position that is significantly playing right now. Isaiah was that guy, but he's obviously playing a wide receiver position in Deuce. So defensively, we knew there was going to be an evolution just kind of on the style of defense that we played. We got to definitely get a lot of bigger bodies, I believe, up front to get what we want to get done to play in this league at a consistent level. So there's things that we're definitely evolving every day. And as a head coach, I think I have to prioritize my recruiting.
That was Bielema, head coach of Illinois yesterday. His team off to a 2-5 start. I hate this. I hate when new coaches come in and blame the previous coach. But more so than that, I hate when new coaches come in and throw that previous coach's recruits under the bus. Because guess what? They're now your players. Sure, maybe you didn't bring them in there, but you came into that program knowing what was there. All right, when he took the job at Illinois, I hope you looked at the roster, you looked at this, you looked at that, you understood what you were taking over. And when you do, those now become your players. It's like in The Office, a show I reference frequently, right? When Michael comes back from the Michael Scott Paper Company and he treats his employees that came with him to the Michael Scott Paper Company, treats them differently. He gets them something to drink. Right? He's talking to them only. Maybe they get more leads and sales. You're all working together. You're a team. You're all together. Bielema can't look at the team. Well, you know, I mean, that was Lovie Smith's guy. He's not very good. We have to do a better job. They are your players. And how would you feel if you're one of those linemen he was talking about? That any lineman they recruited the last 3 years really haven't done anything for us. Everything he said may have been true, but is that what you want to hear publicly from your head coach? You're one of those linemen, and you think, like, wow, this new guy really doesn't like me. Right? And as he even said, like, I decided to keep – oh, you're so brave. Good on you deciding to keep everybody from the previous roster. Right? That's great. Good for you. Honoring the commitments from the school and the previous coach. And you deserve a pat on the back. But I always hate this thought process. Once you take over the program, those are now your players as well. Those are your players you're throwing under the bus. And if you don't like them, I don't know, coach them up. Right? Try to get them better instead of blaming Lovie Smith. Now, in Bielema's defense, I don't know if it's even a defense, but the one thing I'll say is this is his first year. But we heard this a lot with the Gamecocks as well. Will Muschamp and even Ray Tanner, 3 years in. Well, he didn't take over a great situation. Okay, well, it's been long enough, and that's why you hired him, to turn around that situation. Bielema, that's why they brought you in. You want to complain about the cupboard being bare? Okay, then don't take the job next time. You should have known what you were getting yourself into. I always hate this from the coaches. All right, when you take a bite out of the apple, you bought the apple. Right? The apple's now yours. All right, when you get that program, those players are now yours. You may not have brought them there, but they're playing for you. They're coming to practice every day for you. None of this, well, this is my recruit. That guy's not my recruit. and he's not very good. Oh, this coach, he left behind no talent for us. Then don't take the job next time if it's going to be such an issue for you. It's like if a new boss came into your company. And when bosses come in, look, they always want to hire people that they're familiar with. It's why for LSU, everyone's connecting the dots with Jimbo Fisher. You want to bring in your own people. I get that. Right? No one's job is necessarily safe when they hire a new boss. He may make a change. But imagine if you heard that from your boss. Like, well, when I took over this company, there was really no talent here. They haven't done anything for us. They're not very good workers. Only the people I've brought in are doing anything good. These workers that were left over, yeah, they all suck. It's like, okay, well, that's great. Let me get my resume together. I don't want to work for this guy anymore. He doesn't appreciate us. Only the people that he brought in. Everything Bielema may be saying is true, but that's not what you want to hear from your coach. Not publicly. You could say it in the locker room. Say, hey, you guys aren't giving us enough. You know, you got to get better. We're going to recruit over your head, whatever. Try to motivate them. But not in the media. You don't rip them to the media and say, hey, Lovie Smith did a terrible job. And these guys are no good. It's why we're losing because of the no talent that was around here. Be a better coach then. And I always hate when coaches fall back on that, blaming the previous coach and putting their own players down. You may not have recruited them, but those are now your players. They're in your program. Support them instead of putting them down publicly. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. Let's go to the phones. Ed in Charleston is with us, I guess, with some info on that song we heard coming back from commercial break. Ed, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, what's going on, brother? Yeah, just an aside from that first, that stuff blaming the previous administration or the previous cut, that's gone on forever, and it ain't going to change, unfortunately.
No, that's true. I just don't like it. I hate when I hear coaches do that.
I feel you. I feel you. But I was just surprised at the spooktacular movie guru. You did not know that song, Tubular Bells, and whence for it came. That it came from, like, the movie that I refused to watch again. I'd watched it a couple times younger, and I think it left I think it scarred me for life. That song was the theme song from The Exorcist.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
No, I had no idea.
Linda Blair and the split pea soup and the head spinning around.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the,
of course.
Yeah, the holy water. And, oh, my goodness, what a movie. I mean, it really, I really refuse to watch it. And I don't mind scary movies per se. Halloween, obviously, is, to me, is like numero uno. But
that's right.
Yeah, that was a unique. You didn't see that movie?
I've seen it. It's been a long time, though, I do admit.
Okay.
It's been a long time.
All right, yeah. Well, go back and, yeah, that's
Tubular
Bells was that. And it is pretty haunting, for sure.
That is. That's a creepy song.
No,
I don't know the song.
It.
Well, man. All right, I appreciate it, Ed. Give us a call back anytime, especially if you're talking scary movies. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch The Exorcist. It's been a very long time, I'll be honest with you, that
that's
I've seen The Exorcist.
Yeah, I didn't put two and two together either.
I still don't. I'm still not familiar. You know, like, I can't hear it now from the movie. But how about that? That makes sense, because that's a creepy song. And then Halloween came along, and I remember hearing the story behind that song as well. I have to go look it up again. I don't know if there's any connection to The Exorcist. But Halloween came along 5 years later, and they did put together a similar theme to what we heard there that was used in The Exorcist. I mean, that is one of the more iconic horror films, and also made fun of in Scary Movie 2 in a very funny way. When I was growing up, The Ring was the one movie that I watched that, and that scared the hell out of me, and I couldn't watch it again. The Ring. I haven't seen it since. I would watch them today. But at the time, that was the one movie, like maybe Ed with The Exorcist, that I remember from my childhood. That was the one movie that really got me. The Ring. That was a creepy movie back in the day. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour one here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. More on those scary movies coming up, because this has maybe very intrigued. We'll circle back to The Exorcist, Halloween, and everything else in a little bit. Plus our Tuesday Top 10, where I was right, where I was wrong. Plenty more to do this afternoon. Before we go here in hour one, let's go back to the phone. Somerville George is with us. Somerville George, what's going on? How are you?
Yeah, great to talk to you again, Luke.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah, all those names you were mentioning for LSU, I didn't hear Urban Meyer. What do you think the possibility of that is?
Yeah, I would certainly I would give him a call if I'm LSU. If I'm Urban, I just don't see him going back that quickly to college. But the way things have gone in Jacksonville, if you were to want to bail for a college job, LSU would certainly be one of the jobs to go bail and to go back to college for. So I would definitely call him. I just don't think that's as likely as of an option.
Is his contract structured to where Tampa Bay, if they just say goodbye, you know, good luck, they wouldn't owe him anything else other than what for this year?
I'm sure they would owe him something. But which is part of the reason why I don't think Jacksonville will make that move. I think if Urban leaves after 1 year, I think it would be on him. I don't think the Jags would give up on him that quickly.
Yeah, and on the other coaching vacancy, I can't think of the guy's name now. I'll have to call you back.
All right, you think and let us know, and we'll wait to hear. Appreciate it, Somerville George. We've been grading head coaches today. So Dabo was asked about that opening with LSU because according to Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, Dabo is high up on Scott Woodward's list at LSU, and Scott apparently loves Dabo. I mean, obviously, you know, which AD wouldn't want him? And he would be very interested in Dabo to become the next head coach of LSU, which I couldn't see happening. But Dabo was asked about it, and he said, quote, "This is the only Death Valley I'm concerned with right here. That's for sure." That gets an A as well. That's a good answer. Instead of just saying, hey, we're focused on Pittsburgh this week. Or, I just want to talk about the Clemson Tigers. I mean, it was a little bit of that, but he did also give a firm answer. You know, a no in the, along the way. Instead of just dancing around the question. That gets an A as well, as we grade coaches today. Hour 2 coming up next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.